Eclectic Podcast for April 17th, actually 18th, 2006. This is Stephen Freund, and I'm coming to you from the Casa. Just putting a little pause on the Comedy Central, because don't really want to license that in the background. Anyway, it's been a while. Haven't been podcasting, and there's no reason why, except that just kind of been busy. In any event, I just want to get a quick podcast out there. It's about midnight, so it's getting late. But coming to see what's going on. I've been doing a lot of reading, a lot of writing. Not a lot of writing. Wish I was doing a lot of writing. I'm trying to get my 9-point plan together so I can get my writing act together. Too many distractions, too many things going on. I just used rsync to sync up my iTunes libraries from one Mac to the other. It was kind of cool. But I think Mr. Jobs needs to build that in and just, you know, make it easy for users to sync up their libraries, because it's kind of a pain in the butt. And I know other users, they're on a Windows machine, they're on, you know, they're trying to, you know, save off theirs to an external hard drive, and they just need to build that functionality into the iTunes, because other than that, it's pretty cool. But it's just, it's hard to keep, you know, because I'll download songs on my laptop, I'll download songs on my iMac, and, you know, it's, I want to keep everything in sync. But I don't want to dump everything on my laptop. So there's some utilities out there, some freeware utilities that will just pay, basically get everything into sync. But I want to kind of pick and choose what I want to keep in sync. So basically what I'm doing right now is anything that I download on my laptop, I'm just copying automatically over to my desktop. But just want to kind of look at my delicious links. I've been meaning to blog about some things, but I thought, oh, I'll just put a little podcast together. Since I know you want to hear my voice, or at least some of you. There's some people out there that maybe prefer not to listen to my but that's alright. You guys cannot listen to me, not go to my blog, not comment. You know who you are, you bastard. Anyway, so a couple of things I've been thinking about. The new S3, which is Amazon's new service that basically allows developers to build applications or services to their API, which is just a big storage warehouse, and they charge you, I don't know, pennies per the gigabyte, so you can, you know, store a lot of data, store, you know, podcasts, photos, backup. You know, it's 15 cents per gigabyte per month of storage used, and the 20 cents per gigabyte of data transferred. So if you guys have your calculator out there, you know what you can do. Not a new story, but this is not a news podcast. Anybody looking for me to give you the news, then you're in the wrong place. But, you know, I just want to throw it out there. Amazon S3. So there's some developers out there that are already, you know, banging away at it. And, thought about it because, you know, you want to have a place to store your information cheaply. And, you know, the storage space is becoming pretty big, but the prices have been pretty outrageous. So, you know, 15 cents per gigabyte stored. Let's just say, for example, I wanted to back up my entire laptop hard drive. It's 40 gigs. So it's about, what, $6 a month if I back up my entire hard drive plus the transfer cost, if I did the math in my head right. So it seems like a good service. I don't know if I'd back up my entire hard drive on their service. But then again, you know, I did pay, what did I pay, $180 for a 250 gig hard drive. But again, you know, you want your data off-site, and you're hoping Amazon does backups, all that kind of stuff. they have, you know, scalable architecture. And that's the advantage, and that's probably why they're, you know, really doing so cheap. So I'm thinking about signing up for their web service accounts and then testing out some applications and seeing what I like and see what we can do. So that was the Amazon S3, and again, there's a couple people out there doing application development, and there's a good blog that the S3 Web Services group at Amazon are putting together. I think Amazon is really doing some stuff that's pretty interesting. They have the Mechanical Turk, which is kind of like leveraging the wisdom of people or having people do tasks for you. And you could sign up to do tasks and get paid for certain things, solving questions, solving answers. So it's basically using the intelligence of the mob. An interesting story about books and I saw this interesting tale. I was gonna write about it. Basically, just says it's from The Guardian in the UK. A Tale of Two Genders: Men Choose Novels, Alienation, While Women Go for Passion. I don't think it's news to anybody, but just thought it was an interesting article to read about the you know, where the book publishers, you know, you know, obviously need to market to certain groups of people, and what sells, and I'm very interested in that space, the publishing space, and books in general. Speaking of books, I just finished reading. I've been trying to put together a reading list. I'm trying to finish it this week of, you know, books in the queue, books I've read recently, some interesting items. Val Landy, who's a blogger that I got hooked on to from, I think, one of Doc Searle's web posts. I think he linked to his website, but he basically wrote a book called Woman from Cairo, and he had a, you know, pretty good interesting story of how he tried to publish it, you know, through the traditional methods of publishing, you know, shopping his book out, using an agent, and basically getting turned down left and right. And so, you know, he finally went the route of, you know, self-publishing. And he used Amazon again. Amazon has or they purchased, or they created a division called Book Surge. And basically, they're self-publishing on-demand publishers. One of the other big ones in the space is iUniverse, which I've been looking into. I've been kind of looking for a self-publishing channel for when I finally do finish writing my stuff to get my stuff published, because I know that, you know, I just want to get it out there. So the cheapest, easiest way to get it out there, self-publishing, which is a huge topic in of by itself of how writers are becoming, you know, the creators, the distributors, and they're using cheap methods to get it out there. And you know, it could see the model of the publisher, the music business, the content creators have more control over it. So Val Landy, A Woman from Cairo, and it's a really great book. I really enjoyed it, and it was a good page turner. And I'm kind of a sucker for books and movies and such, where it's like, you know, it's like I really love the genre, and I get caught up in it. And you know, there's not really a bad book that I've read recently, because I generally am pretty selective of what I choose. And Val was kind enough to send me a copy, and so I, you know, I told him I'd read it and blog about it. So I owe him a blog post, and I owe him an Amazon you know, quote or whatever they call those things, recommendation or review. What else am I looking at? Oh, blogger, I'm trying to get my template sorted out. I'm thinking about redesigning my blog and doing a new template. That's really not interesting to anybody but me. I personally, you know, I have this feeling that, you know, people, when they redesign their blogs And they're saying, you know, drive traffic to me, drive traffic to me. Basically saying all you RSS readers, you know, I'm spending time on designing a blog and you're not looking at it. I verily rarely visit blogs. The only time I visit something is if they have partial feeds and I really want to get the content. Otherwise, RSS is the way to go. So my redesign of my blog is, my template is, it's just for me to, you know, practice my skills. And all right, that's my Mac talking. And, you know, just give it a fresh look, and just so when I visit it, I'm not tired of it. Really excited about the Da Vinci Code. I know there's been a lot of news about Dan Brown, as far as he won his case in England where he was being sued by, I think, the publishers of Holy Blood, Holy Grail, or one of those books that talked about some of the themes in the Da Vinci Code, and essentially said that Dan Brown did not copy any information. And interesting controversy, because Da Vinci Code just hit paperback. Da Vinci Code movie is coming out in less than a month now. A lot of people say that this is just more hype to add to, you know, the bottom line. But I think it you know, somebody had a legitimate argument. They took him to court and they lost, and they have to pay his legal bills. So they're not too happy. But you know, Dan Brown's been the target. Another interesting controversy. There's a book called The Da Vinci Legacy, and it was written, I think, in 1983 by Louis Perdue. And I happened to read that book after I read The Da Vinci Code, and I really liked it. I think, you know, he had a great, compelling book with some of the same themes, and his other book, Daughter of God, which I haven't gotten through, I guess, you know, has, you know, obviously a lot of the similar Da Vinci Code themes, and there was some legal, you know, goings on between Louis Perdue and I think Random House, he's been talking about it pretty candidly, and he talks about, you know, how he's pretty much, you know, getting the shaft by the big publishers. I think that, you know, it's hard to say. It's a really difficult business to really say, you know, verbatim, I stole your idea. I mean, ideas are nothing new, you know. They're just different ideas mixed together, chopped up into different pieces. It's really difficult to come up with a unique idea, and I don't think the Da Vinci Code was anything unique. Obviously, some of the, you know, characters and some of the plot lines were unique, but the themes within the Da Vinci Code is nothing new. And I'm sure you could find more books out there that would, you know, before the Da Vinci Code came out, that would surface. It's just that, you know, the Da Vinci Code was so huge that people just, you know, hey, I found a target, I found a fat cow, and I'm ready to take them on and see if I can get money. I don't know if that's true in Louis Perdue's case. I mean, I really don't know what happened. He indicates that Random House sued him for I don't know what. But anyway, if you do a Google search of Louis Perdue or the Da Vinci Legacy, you'll link to, he has several blogs. He's written some more stuff since then. He's published some books, but I think the derivative of this all is, and the byproduct of it is, I think he's selling more books, because I was, you know, attracted to, you know, after I read the Da Vinci Code, I really was interested in that topic, and I noticed that there was somebody else out there that had something similar. Now, there was a lot of copycats, a lot of, you know, knockoffs, you know, a lot of people trying to capture the Da Vinci Code coattails. But his was, you know, much, you know, 20 years before Da Vinci Code even came out. So I think it was legitimate for me to read that and see, you know, what other themes this topic can explore. So it was pretty interesting to me. And so I just want to bring that up because, you know, there's a lot going on with the Da Vinci Code. And I'm a big fan. I ain't gonna lie. It's like, it's not cool to like it because it's so big, but it was a good book. And I hope the movie's going to be better, too. Let's see. I'm just looking at my delicious links, some of the stuff I've been liking recently. Oh, blog I read is called Shameless Words, and it's a journalist living in France, and it's another publishing blog, and it's pretty interesting, hosted on Blogger. And he basically talks about the concept of short chapters and lots of breaks, and how he's been noticing growing tendency for shorter chapters in books. And I noticed that in Val's book that he had, a lot shorter chapters. And to the reader, it's really kind of encouraging because you feel more accomplished. I tend to read in little short spurts because of, the management of my time. So I'll read at lunch, for 20 minutes. I'll read before I go to bed. I'll read in the morning. So I got these little bursts of time, and if I'm getting through a chapter in that period of time, I'm like, wow, I'm getting through my book, and it really encourages me to read. So I kind of like that concept of shorter chapters, bigger, more chapters is cool. I mean, if you have 40 chapters versus 20, psychologically, it's kind of cool that you can, do that. That's kind of nerdy, but okay, I'm a nerd, whatever. Whatevs. What else is going on? Oh, it's not a cool thing. It's not out yet, but DabbleDB, which is an online database. The online space or this Web 2.0 stuff is kind of cool, but
Hi, I'm Avi Bryant, and
I'm not gonna play the. They have a little demo out there, which you can get at. DabbleDB, that's DabbleDB.com/UTR, and they have a under the radar best of show kind of thing where they won this award at Under the Radar Conference, which is, I guess, a bunch of small companies bringing stuff together. But basically, it's an online database where you could upload data from either an Excel spreadsheet or manually typing in, or I guess through other means. And you can analyze the data, sort it, keep it. And you see all these generations of online applications coming to fruition. You have your Writelys, you have your online Word type documents, you have your online Excel type documents with spreadsheets. And I was waiting for the access killer or the small database application. And so DabbleDB and some other users are out there. And I think it's really good for the personal space and for the personal users because, a lot of people, quite frankly, can't afford to buy the Office suite, especially, Access is, it's pretty complicated. And you want something that's very user-friendly, very easy to manage data, keep data. And so it's a pretty good application. I mean, and quite honestly, I'd love to use it for some of my professional applications, because they have such an easy user interface and it's very simple. And they have a 7-minute demo that's really cool. I just went through and checked it out. So if you get a chance, they're still in private beta, but they said they're coming out pretty soon. And I think you can put your name on a list, and they will send you something when they're ready. Let me see what else is in my little blog about. I have a little blog about. I gotta go through my delicious links. I've got a bunch of links from a while ago. Looking at DRM, there's a lot of heat about France saying Apple to strip your DRM off your products. DRM is an interesting topic that I'm doing some research on, trying to come up with some ideas, but. My opinion is, most people don't care DRM is on their iTunes music that they buy. I equate it to this. There's a lot of geeks out there that'll say DRM is bad. You can't control your music, you can't copy it, and to some extent that's not true. You know, Apple lets you keep several copies of your files that you've purchased. I think you can have it up to 5 machines or several devices. You know, I have all my songs on my iPod, I have all my songs on my Mac, I have all my songs on my laptop, and I have all my songs on a backup hard drive, and probably will have all my songs on some type of online storage. So that's 4 or 5 copies right there, and I have no problems. Okay. Some people have issues with machines, and they blow up, and then they didn't, you know, unauthorized computers, and, you know, I mean, people have issues, but for the most part, DRM really is seamless to a lot of end users. Most kids these days, they download music, they throw on their iPod. You know, I can remember the days when I went and bought CDs. You know, CDs have, you know, were more DRM than any digital music, in my opinion. Because with CDs, they get scratched, you lose them, they get broken. You don't get a replacement cost for that. You don't get to say, hey. And most people didn't back up CDs. I mean, backing up CDs took a lot of time and patience. Backing up digital files is so easy. You know, you copy them to a hard drive, you upload them, you save them to your Gmail account. I mean, I'm not recommending that because I think it breaks your license agreement. But anyway, so DRM is a big issue. A lot of people want to talk about, you know, fair use, and I think there's a lot of legitimate arguments on the other side, and I don't think anybody's going to solve that issue right now, but, it's again, it's an interesting topic. Coming up about 21 minutes, so I'm going to go ahead and chime down on the iClectic podcast for April 18th, 2006, and it's been a while since I did a podcast, so just want to throw that out there, and hopefully I've been having trouble uploading files to R-Media. I know R-Media has been, you know, having scaling problems. I hope they do well, but I'm going to go ahead and see if we can get this uploaded soon. All right. Thank you for listening. Stephen Fry, Eclectic Podcast.